Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a very busy week in the Capitol, but first, wish I was there. Meet the new CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp, Melissa Hughes. She talks about taking over the agency. The governor talks about vaping and barcodes on our ballots. Wish I was there.
I'm really looking forward to getting to know all of you as board members at Organic Valley. I work very closely with our board of just 7 farmers. This is a new challenge of getting to meet you all and getting to know you, but I'm really looking forward to that.
I believe vaping is something that we have to be very concerned about. When it first happened, people were saying, oh yes, this will prevent people from smoking. Most research has shown is that vapers become smokers more often than not.
It's likely Lincoln Hills won't be able to close by July 1st, in my opinion. Likely to be a phased-in process, where youth will then go to the facilities as they become operational.
Back in 1980, when we only protected against 7 diseases, the vaccines that were required and to give that immunity included something on the order of about 15,000 different antigens. By the year 2017, we're now protecting against 16 diseases, but only with 173 different antigens.
The Economic Policy Institute estimates that wage theft costs American workers as much as $50 billion per year.
Today is historic because our governor, Tony Evers, is the first sitting governor of Wisconsin to honor Hispanic Heritage Month in our state's capital.
The truth about the bill is that we keep hearing that this is taking away First Amendment rights, in that we're felonizing peaceful protest. As Ledge Council has stated 3 times now, that if it's a lawful protest, nobody has anything to worry about.
My ancestors would be ashamed of Wisconsin at this point, and frankly, I wish they had never come here.
You need to reject voting equipment that records votes as barcodes. Wisconsin is not among the states that audits by hand counts after every election. You know Wisconsin is not among the states that recounts by hand. If the voters can't verify that those barcodes are correct, no one else is going to until the people that are voted for get sworn into office, and not even then.
We're going to hear excerpts from Congressman Sean Duffy's goodbye speech in a little bit, but J.R., the governor this week called the special election for that. January 27th special election, December 30 primary if needed. We have Tom Tiffany and Mr. Church running as Republicans.
Yep.
You look for primaries in both?
Not sure yet about Democrats. Republicans, yes. Democrats still determined. This week, Pat Kreitlow, former state senator,
said no.
Christine Mugley Bremer, Wausau attorney, both said no. So we're still waiting to see what Democrat emerges. What's interesting to me has been the timing of this election and what's going to mean. One thing, if you're a clerk in the Southern Congressional District, you're not very happy because you now have a special election in January, primary in December. I mean, you're going to have 5 elections or 4 elections in 5 months.
Right.
Because December primary, January general, February primary for the normal primary.
April spring general. So this is you had your team poll those clerks.
We had talked to a couple of them who were like, this is going to be a problem. It's not quite doable, but we'll see. But Evers faced a little bit of a time crunch for what he wanted to do. Under state law, if you have a special election come February 1st, it has to line up with the normally scheduled spring election. Mm-hmm. That means February primary, April spring election.
Right.
If you do that, however, you are put in the Southern Congressional District race about the same time as the Supreme Court race and the presidential primary. So some questions there about whether that would have driven turnout for Republicans in the 7th, which then would have impacted the Supreme Court race. Now, Evers says it wasn't about politics. It's about getting somebody in that seat as quickly as possible with impeachment, with trade wars, everything else going on. But, you know, people think there may be some politics at play. So if you want to avoid the April ballot for this election, you have a very narrow window. And from what the governor's office and the Elections Commission told me, the earliest you get a call was January 21st, but that may mean a December 24th primary. His other option was
Christmas Eve primary.
Other option is January 28th for a Tuesday election, beating that February 1st deadline.
Yeah.
But that would mean a New Year's Eve primary. That's why we're going on a very rare, if not unprecedented, Monday election, right? January 27th, mm-hmm. December 30th primary. Who's that going to benefit? We're compressing the window, right? Now, here we sit here in late September. The primary's going to be in December. We've got basically 2 months to run. Does that benefit a Tom Tiffany, who's been working that district for a long time, when it comes to the GP nomination, working it for a long time, anticipation of Duffy leaving, has all kinds of surrogates and fellow state lawmakers to kind of, you know, go out there and sing his praises. How does Jason Church kind of catch up? Well, he's got a compelling story. WMPUT, injured in Afghanistan in 2014 or 12, I can't remember which one it was.
Right, from the IED.
Really compelling story, but he needs the resources to tell that story. So can he raise them quickly enough, get that message out, so that he's well-known by December 30th? Oh, by the way, who's going to turn out?
Oh, that's true.
The last time we had a special election for a congressional seat was 1993. Les Aspin left the first congressional district, a Democrat, to join the Clinton administration. Peter Barco won that seat. I went back and looked, like roughly 40% of the people who voted, turnout was like roughly 40% of what it was in November for that seat. So what's it going to look like? We're talking about in the middle of the holiday season, right?
Yeah.
Retirees living up in northern Wisconsin, are they already going to be gone for the winter?
Snowbirding.
Like, what's it look like? You can still cast a ballot by, you know, absentee.
Sure.
But it's going to be a very different race than what we're used to. For Democrats, you could argue, and Republicans complain about this, is all about politics, and then Evers trying to suppress turnout. If you're a Democrat, you could argue that your best bet would have been to have this on the April ballot because you have a presidential primary driving turnout.
Yeah.
It's likely that we'll see more Democrats and Republicans vote in that primary or that election in April because of that. However, the 7th is overwhelmingly Republican.
Right.
So if you're a Democrat, your best bet may have been to have that driving turnout, the presidential primary, or you're hoping for a repeat of 2018. Remember the state Senate special election in the 10th Senate District, right?
Yes.
December primary, shock. January special
Democratic.
Election. Low turnout, low attention, big shock. Can Democrats replicate that? Remember, Trump won that Senate seat by 17 points in 16, and the Democrat won. He
now,
won
you said
this
Senate seat. Do you mean Trump won the Oh, okay. But I want to didn't Trump have the biggest margin in the 7th Congressional District, U.S. House District?
Plus 20.
Plus and 20.
So you're trying, I mean, the thing is that Senate race, with state senators is kind of sleepy, doesn't really have attention. You're not going to have that at the congressional race, right? The NRCC, the DCCC, if they're they see that they're going to come in here and play. But for a Democrat, your best bet is that in January, your base has more energy than the Republican base, and you can pull up a shock.
Okay, but we've talked a lot about the timing of this election. What about Speaker Voss's letter to the governor today saying, Governor, you may not have realized that Monday, December 30th, is the final day of Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights, for our Jewish residents. This is a request to change the date of the special election so that the anticipated primary would not be held during Hanukkah. One more sentence. It is unnecessary to require Wisconsinites to exercise their civic duty to vote on a day they have set aside for a religious purpose. Do you see this, the dates being moved?
We called the governor's office this morning. Had not heard back from him before. I had to come over here, so still waiting for a response. But okay. I don't even know if you can rescind executive order setting a special election. Remember, the nomination papers have already been circulated. They could start the day that he issued the order on Monday, they could start being circulated. So things are already in progress.
Okay. Now we hear from the no longer congressman from the 7th District, Sean Duffy, in his goodbye speech, followed by Governor Evers talking about the points made by JR, why he called it on these dates. Please.
I don't think our founders ever envisioned that to come to this chamber, it should be a lifetime sentence. We're supposed to come and be citizen legislators and serve our time and then step aside and let someone else step forward and do the good work. It is not my seat. It was not my predecessor's seat. It's the people's seat.
The battle for America's future is a fight against socialism. It is a battle to return our nation to the principles that made America different, that made America better, that made America great. I want to thank the great state of Wisconsin for their trust. I want to thank my whole family for their support.
Governor, Republicans say you made a political decision calling a special election for December and January that you're adding cost to clerks after saying a couple months ago didn't want to do that. Did the Supreme Court factor in your decision about that special election?
No. What factored into my position is getting somebody representing that congressional district as soon as possible. Think about the things that are needed to be dealt with by Congress and not having, you know, whether it's ranging from impeachment to making sure that we have a good trade deal for our farmers. So it had nothing to do with that. It has to do with actually people being represented in a timely fashion.
Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald is, well, a longtime leader of Senate Republicans, but now he's a candidate for the 5th District seat held by the retiring Jim Sensenbrenner. So he floats this idea, as you reported, for a tax decrease after we see the January revenues. So, but then the governor, at an event, I think at a Wisconsin mm-hmm. event, said a one-time increase in revenue cannot, in perpetuity, fund a tax cut. That's not the way money works. It's questionable rhetoric. I guess it has something to do with election prospects for him. And then Alex Zimmerman for Mr. Fitzgerald said he has always prioritized cutting taxes and overseen billions of dollars in tax cuts. It should be no surprise that he's interested in the possibility of further tax cuts. How do you see this playing out? And especially in light of this report by Speaker Voss yesterday, that Republicans cut taxes by $13.1 billion between 2011 and 2018.
Well, when I asked you this week about this, I mean, on the one hand, whenever we've seen excess revenues coming in, the default kind of position for Republicans has been to send it back to taxpayers. They did that 2014. There was a big change with holding tables and cut the property tax levy for tech colleges. Remember that?
Yeah, and they got rid of the forestry mill levy on all of our property tax bills.
So we've done things like this for the last decade. The issue here is that, one, Fitz is pegging this on January having a better revenue picture. Mm-hmm. Remember, the Fiscal Bureau, nonpartisan budget arm legislature, does these revenue estimates every so often to say, okay, here's where we're at, here's where we think we're going to be. We just got a report from them in the last month saying that the final numbers for 2018-19 were even better than we thought they were.
Yes.
But not by that much. Now we have an economy where we've got some questions about trade wars, tariffs, what the future is going to look like.
Economic recession.
All that kind of stuff. So you're building up an expectation that January will have an even rosier picture than what we had just a few months ago. People I talked to are like, that may not be a good bet. The other thing is, what would this tax cut look like if you proposed one? Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, his office said that he hadn't really discussed this with Fitzgerald, but he said he'd be open to the idea. He also cautioned it would not necessarily be an income tax cut. We'll see what it looks like. Also, we won't take this out of the rainy day fund to do a tax cut. You also now need Governor Evers to get on board. Yeah. Remember, the last couple of years, Republicans did things like the sales tax rebate in August. They did that one-time thing. The parent thing, $100 a kid. Those were done Republicans controlling both houses plus the governor's office. Now you have Governor Evers who's saying there are other priorities out there besides a tax cut.
But Speaker Voss, in his report released yesterday, clearly opened a new election year campaign theme for mm-hmm. Republicans. Look, we Republicans were in charge of the Capitol from 2011 to 2018, before the election of Mr. Evers, and we cut taxes by $13.1 billion, and let's just break that down. $7.2 billion of that income and franchise taxes, $5.7 billion of that for property taxes. So they're on the offense. Is this a number that taxpayers are likely to relate to?
It depends on how you feel personally about it. I mean, that's the whole thing with the federal tax cut that happened a couple of years ago when Speaker Ryan was still there. In talking to me about that, the whole messaging of that was the average person will see X dollars, from this tax cut. And the polls didn't reflect that people felt like it was going to impact them, because when I asked people, I said, look, when you take what the average tax cut is, right, get rid of that number, because the average covers everybody, right, from here to here.
Yeah.
Think more about the median or what the typical income for Wisconsin. Okay, spread that over, let's say you get paid every 2 weeks, 26 paychecks. What's that mean? Okay, take out your taxes, your withholdings for your 401k, your health care, everything else from that extra bump.
$10, $12, $18?
Add in that you are already making, that's an average week, you get a couple, 3 hours overtime, so your check is kind of going up and down every 2 weeks anyway. You didn't feel the impact. So I'm bringing that up with this, do people really feel the impact of the tax cuts personally, and then they're going to give him more credit.
Okay, but I'm saying that Speaker Voss seems to be saying, look, as opposed to the federal tax cut, which drove up the deficit that nobody wants to talk about in Washington anymore, we were Wisconsin Republicans have been very responsible.
And one lesson Republicans learned from these tax cuts they've done the last few years is that when they did that property tax cut in 14 with the property tax levy for tech colleges, mm-hmm. they realized nobody saw the benefit of that tax cut until the December property tax bill.
That's a good point.
They realized that that didn't really do anything for us. Right. Don't look for something like that again if they do. I mean, rebates, we've seen rebates going back, 2000? There's a rebate?
Right. I think it was $188 average. Okay, new subject. The Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention reported, and let's hear from both co-chairs, Representative Joan Baldwig, Representative Steve Doyle, before we talk about the recommendations. Please.
The charge of the task force from the Speaker was to evaluate the current resources for suicide prevention in our state and identify opportunities to target and assist at-risk individuals. Even though the recommendations may not include all that each of us wanted, we have reached a common ground that we feel will make a difference.
I look at this kind of in comparison to the task force that I co-chaired last session, which was the foster care task force. We were allocated $5 million to spend, and that, for me, is what I would like to see us ultimately end up spending. The package that's coming out now is a little bit less than that. My job throughout this process is going to be to say, hey, Joint Finance, hey, legislative leadership, you know, we have an $81 billion budget. $5 million to save people's lives is not asking too much. How about we ratchet it up a little bit?
Okay, let's talk about the recommendations before I ask you to get into this backstory on funding the suicide prevention hotline.
Sure.
But, okay, hire two staffers, including a director of suicide prevention, grants for high schools for peer-to-peer suicide prevention programs, grants for groups that train staffs at firearm retailers or shooting ranges on how to avoid selling or renting guns to someone who is suicidal. Groups and local governments would get grants for suicide prevention, include potentially buying trigger locks and firearms locks. And this will be part of the assembly. Republicans will discuss how far to go next week. So there's not really at a caucus. Mm-hmm. So there's not really many startling recommendations. But what's this backstory on funding the suicide hotline?
So there's money put aside in the budget already, $220,000 over 2 years, to help pay for a grant toward a suicide hotline. Now, the way it was crafted, it would go through the Department of Public Instruction. Once it requested the money, the Joint Finance Committee could then release it. That money hasn't been released yet. The members of the task force were debating whether to basically include a bill in the package that would appropriate the money but add some new requirements. One, it would direct it through DPI, go through the Department of Health Services. The task force basically wants to make DHS the central point for Wisconsin comes to these programs. Two, it would require some new reporting to come back to say how effective this is. From what I understand, the people working on this thought they needed to do a bill to add those strings to the money, not realizing that Joint Finance could add that on its own.
Yeah.
Why this is kind of important is by doing a bill, you take more time than just releasing the money that's already in the budget. And it kind of overshadowed what was in the report because we, like a lot of other media outlets, got an advanced copy of what the task force was talking about, included the bill provision that changed then to his having Joint Finance, a recommendation for Joint Finance to release the money, mm-hmm. And asking Joan Baldwin, the chair, okay, well, when did you guys make this change? She didn't really directly answer the question. Steve Doyle, a Democrat, who vice chair of the commission, said he found out the day before that they were taking it out. It, you know, and honestly, like, the recommendation for the bill is not that big of a difference because it has the same provisions, right? The reporting requirements, who's going to dole it out. It's just the timing of it. That said, it kind of exposed that these task force are supposed to be like these bipartisan efforts that they can work together on some big topic and come to a conclusion on things. Republicans feel like Democrats should undercut the process they suspect that Dems leaked this interim, you know, the rough draft report.
Which angered Representative Baldwin.
And Voss and others.
Yeah.
Democrats are knocking this kind of collection of bills because they're saying, look, there's nothing about gun violence. There's no gun proposal. There's no red flag law. And they've made that one of their calling cards and talk to gun violence is we need to address people who are a threat to themselves and others we'll run flag law.
Right. And you quoted Voss yesterday as saying there will be action on these suicide prevention recommendations by the end of the year.
That is his goal, yes.
Okay. Now, as we pointed out, both caucuses will soon be deciding what they actually want to take up in the fall session. Mm-hmm. But let's give them some help here. Let's walk through some issues. And the first category, action possible. I'm going to ask you confirmation of cabinet appointments.
I think the Senate's going to get to, Senate probably will get together when they meet next week and go, okay, who can we get done? I think at last check, all but a couple had received confirmation votes from Senate committees.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Maybe three. So what can they get done? I suspect there'll be a couple that'll be hung up and won't be taken up, but we'll see. It just depends on what that Republican caucus. Are there 17 votes from that caucus by itself to pass these nominations?
Tougher drunk driving laws. Remember, Jim Ott wants, if you're charged first offense, you must appear in court. That would be the least change. Are we likely to see tougher drunk driving laws?
Alberta Darling, co-chair of the Finance Committee, is right along most of those bills with Ott. The question is the price. It's the same in every session, the price tag.
Okay.
Because the price tag drives that we need. We have overcrowded prisons. If we up the penalties, there'll be more people in prison. Require more beds and on down the line, so do they have the money to do these things?
Senator Pat Testin recently had a press conference with AARP. He'd like to push for funding of a tax credit for caregivers, maybe just a joint finance hearing on this. Do you think this action possible in the fall session? You don't seem too convinced.
It's just, this is the hard thing about this. I asked some members this week, like, what are you guys going to get done? They said, look, we haven't talked to each other
okay.
in weeks, if not months. So until they get together.
We're just trying to help them out here.
Until they get together, they don't really know in themselves what they're going to get done.
Okay.
But what is clear from the conversation is that they don't expect a heavy calendar, you know, or a lot of bills to pass. They may have a full calendar for a couple of days, but it's like one or two days this fall, a couple of days in the spring. They're talking like they could be done in February next year and be off the campaign trail.
Recommendations of the Assembly Water Quality Task Force?
I do get the impression that Voss wants to do water at some point. The question is this fall or the spring. But I do think they want to get something done on that issue.
Okay. This compromise on deadlines to test sexual assault kits, that's got the attorney generals. He's mm-hmm. he's on board, and Republican and Dem leggies. You see action on that?
Again, want to see what the caucuses say when they get together.
Okay. So that's my category of action possible. Now let's talk wild card issues. I want to open the debate. I know that Pat Testin came out for medical marijuana, and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said not going to happen. But Speaker Voss is still interested in this. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that he could thread a compromise on medical marijuana?
No.
And lay it at the door of the Senate?
Could it get out of the Assembly? Maybe. But is any of it become law? No. Scott Fitzgerald is not going to let that bill become law. I mean, he personally opposes it. Members of the caucus oppose it. He's running for Congress in a conservative district. He's not going to bend on medical marijuana, no.
Yeah, but you haven't ruled out Voss threading it through the Assembly.
Maybe, if that's a priority for
you
him.
You have your doubts. Okay, this compromise, this fragile compromise on releasing police body camera footage.
It came out of a Senate committee 5-0 this week, I believe, so it might get done. I mean, Testin's an interesting one because, remember, Pat Testin's maybe one of the only real true Republican targets for Democrats in 2020.
Yeah,
so
he's a first-termer.
So Republicans want to get some of his bills done so he can show that he's gotten some stuff done on water, on these things. I'm not sure if the Assembly has buy-in yet on these bills. Again, it's going to be part of the how do they get together.
The dark store issue has been a priority of Senate President Roth mm-hmm. and Senate Republican Dewey Strobel. But I'm going to say I don't see anything happen on this. Do you agree with me?
This is an issue that cuts across party lines. There are, well, I should say that Republicans are split about the issue. Democrats, for the most part, are on board with doing something. Republicans are split. As long as they're split, not going to happen.
Yeah, the governor put that in his February budget, but it went nowhere. Mm-hmm. Limits on vaping, given all the Wisconsin made the front page of the Wall Street Journal this week because of the hospitalizations
of
vaping-related illnesses.
There's a bill that would raise to 21 the age to buy tobacco products in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Has some bipartisan backing. Governor Evers said he supports it, but at our luncheon he said he also has concerns because he's afraid he'll give vaping a pass, quote unquote.
Okay.
So that's going to be something to watch. And also you're seeing nationally this pushback on vaping where President Trump's talked about maybe some limits on this.
Yes.
But you're seeing conservatives starting to go, oh, well, hey, we don't like the idea of government coming and saying, no, you can't do this.
And just a programming note, at 2 o'clock today I'll be doing a Newsmakers with Secretary of Health Services Andrea Palm on vaping. But moving on. We have to confirm our state hemp growing laws to the new federal act, or it puts in jeopardy our hemp growing industry. So when I check with Tessin's office and Rep. Kurtz, they're still pushing this. I see action on this coming.
Possibly. Another Tustin bill.
Okay. I think you and I can quickly go through the issues that have no chance of being considered. Universal background checks.
No.
Legalizing recreational marijuana.
No.
Expand Medicaid coverage with federal cash.
No. Evers this week said he's going to push that bill again. A question the audience at our luncheon was, how does it look different than the budget? He said it won't, but we're going to go district to district, keep pushing this until they start losing members and realize they have to do something.
Right.
I would hold my breath.
The red flag law?
Nope.
And I'll be doing a Newsmakers with Attorney General Call on Monday on how a red flag law would actually work. Okay, stock reports.
So out-of-state students.
Out-of-state students are?
Yeah, rising.
Rising.
UW-Madison, record incoming class this year, but barely half of them are from Wisconsin. Now, the obvious answer to this is that
out-of-staters pay more tuition.
Yes.
Yes.
About $38,000 versus $11,000. We've had a tuition freeze for in-state students now in its seventh year, with another one coming. That's limited the ability of UW to raise money from in-state students. Now, here's the thing. One, people tell me, look at the acceptance rate. That's been fairly consistent. If you're an in-state student, fairly consistent. And the number, the raw number of students from Wisconsin in is a record, or one of the highest in the last 10 years, I'm sorry. Why is this important? Well, lawmakers tell you they get angry calls and their kid can't get into UW-Madison.
You bet.
But as long as the acceptance rate is somewhere, you know, like a lot of them are getting in, that kind of keeps it a little bit capped, I'd say.
Okay, mixed.
Ron Kind, so look, this impeachment talk nationally, it's putting the squeeze on moderate Democrats. Ron Kind is a perfect example of a moderate Democrat in this impeachment squeeze. On the one hand, the base is jazzed up because they can't stand Donald Trump. On the other, Ron Kind has a district that voted for Trump in 2016. So he has to kind of figure out how to navigate this. While Mark Pocan and Gwen Moore, Democrats from Madison, Milwaukee, backed the impeachment proceedings this week, Kind said he wanted an investigation of what's going on, but did not go full-throated for impeachment. Now, the Republicans are jumping all over. You know, some of them are trying to jump all over this, saying, oh, this guy's in trouble. You can't beat somebody with nobody. And here we are at end of September, the year of election, and there's nobody who was declared as a Republican, at least somebody of a name that people know, mm-hmm. running against Ron Kind. I call every month the sources in the 3rd District, who's going to run? They say, we're working on somebody, JR, but we don't have anybody yet. I'm like, well, why? Like, well, the national people see the Trump numbers and go, there's an opportunity. We know Ron Kind from 20 years in office, where he's done a good job of, you know, work in the district, of having this brand as moderate Democrat, and he's got $2.6 million in the bank. It's hard to find somebody to run against him.
Yeah.
So until I see, and not just anybody, but an A-list candidate against Ron Kind, people I talk to are skeptical that he can be beaten. But this is going to put him in a difficult spot going forward because he is in that kind of swingy, light blue district that likes Donald Trump.
Yeah, I agree with that. Next, falling.
So Wisconsin jobs, look, you know, unemployment, last we found out, it ticked up to 3.1%. That's still a pretty good spot to be. But it broke a record of 13 straight months at or below 3%.
Okay.
I saw a report in Bloomberg, Wisconsin lost 4,000 manufacturing jobs between January and June of this year. Those monthly unemployment numbers show we've lost about 10,000 non-farm jobs from the start of the year through August. DOR puts out a quarterly economic outlook, and it's kind of raising some red flags about job growth. It's going to be not that great this year. Now, here's the thing. For the 8 years that Governor Walker was in office, job creation became a big deal because he said, I'm going to create 250,000 jobs. But it's pounded in our heads for 8 years, right, as reporters.
Yes.
You can't trust those monthly numbers. You have to wait for the gold standard, that was the words Republicans.
Gold standard.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers. Well, right. We won't get a number for 2019 until January or right. February, something like that. This is why I bring it up. Here you have Republicans trying to say it's the Evers economy that's causing this. And why are they doing that? Because Donald Trump is on the ballot next year. And what's his calling card? The economy. This is his number one issue for re-election is his stewardship of the economy. If voters see the economy going south, it hurts Donald Trump in Wisconsin. Democrats, meanwhile, are jumping all over these numbers saying, hey, look, they're a problem, the farm economy, our manufacturing economy. These are all because, in their words, the trade tariffs, the trade war, this is Donald Trump causing a problem. I remember in 2012, when Walker was trying to fend off that recall election, right? he tried to thread the needle of talking about how great things were going on in his stewardship without giving Obama credit, because Obama's on the ballot in November and Evers or Walker in June. Here it's somewhat different. It's similar in that they're both trying to blame the other side for the problems, but it's still different because who's on the ballot in 2020? Trump. Evers on the ballot for until 2022. So when I talk to people like, hey, can this cause Evers trouble? They're like, well, maybe, but not now. Okay. The focus is on President Trump. This is really at his doorstep. But watch Republicans try to say it's not the president, it's Tony Evers.
Okay, we got 20 seconds to talk about next week. Do you hear the Joint Finance is going to meet quickly?
Possibly waiting for a day.
Okay, and I'm looking forward to next week because I've got the Attorney General Josh Call, newsmakers on Monday, Wisconsin Realtors Association on housing shortages on Tuesday, civil dialogue on medical marijuana with Senator Testa and Representative Colstie on Thursday. And I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 27.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.